Chapter 33, quote, "The dragon was wroth," end quote. From the beginning to the end, the serpent pursues with hatred the spiritual idea. Mary Baker Eddy, 1906. Right after Communion Week, on the 20th of June, Mrs. Eddy had written, quote, "Greetings," end quote. Miscellany, page 175, quote, "to the good folk of Concord," end quote. This letter, published in the Concord Evening Monitor and the Concord Daily Patriot, began, quote, "I am pleased to see Professor Kent's homestead freshly thriving and to have its occupants again for neighbors," end quote. Professor John F. Kent's house was clearly visible from Pleasant View, being just across Pleasant Street, and it had been quite well known for a number of years that Professor Kent was perhaps Mrs. Eddy's bitterest enemy in all of Concord, though that had not always been the case. In a letter to Irving Tomlinson in 1899, the leader had said, quote, "Animals we please by stroking them, the way the hair grows. But stroking it the way we want it to grow will convince never a Professor Kent. I got him once where he loved to hear me talk science, at least he said so, and I like his frankness. But others have manipulated him out of it, at least his wife has. And so has malicious animal magnetism," end quote. But the import of her greetings to Concordians in June of 1906 was in these two sentences. "May I ask, in behalf of the public, this favor of our city government, namely, to macadamize a portion of Warren Street, and to macadamize North State Street throughout. I am sure that the counterfeit letters in circulation purporting to have my signature must fail to influence the minds of this dear people to conclusions the very opposite of my real sentiments." The card Mrs. Eddy published in the Sentinel of July 14th may bear relationship to her request for paving the streets. Card. "We lose the sense of personality when describing love, and so base the behests of praise on worth akin to unworldliness, on goodness shorn of self, and on charity governed by God, influencing the acts of men, even as charity which, quote, suffereth long and is kind," end quote. Mrs. Mary Beecher Longyear's charity is of the sort that letteth not the left hand know what the right hand doeth, that giveth unspoken to the needy, and is felt more than heard in a wide field of benefactions. Seldom have I seen such individual, impartial giving as this. Therefore, I hasten to praise it and turn upon it the lens of spiritual faith and love, which enforce the giving liberally to all men and the upbraiding of none. Begging her pardon for the presumption of my pen, if such it be to, quote, "render unto Caesar the things that are Caesar's," end quote. I hope that I have neither grieved her meekness nor overrated her generosity thereby. Mary Baker Eddy. The Concord City Government called a special meeting on Tuesday evening, August 7th, at which time they voted to expend $5,000 to improve State Street. If Mrs. Longyear's recent charity had been a contribution to the Concord Street Fund, it was but the first of many. Contributions accompanied by letters of appreciation poured into Concord and Pleasant View. A number of them were published in the Sentinel, including one from Emma Thompson, whose church in Minneapolis sent $500 to help, quote, to smooth a little of the way over which you pass on your daily drives, end quote. On October 19th, Mrs. Eddy wrote a notice, quote, to one and all, end quote, thanking them for their lavish giving, but closing the Concord Street Fund. The second item that Mrs. Eddy addressed in her greetings to Concordians, that of counterfeit letters, was enlarged upon early in September. For several years prior to 1906, every issue of the Sentinel had contained this notice, Mrs. Eddy takes no patience. The author of the Christian Science textbook takes no patience, does not consult on disease, nor read letters referring to these subjects. In the second Sentinel of Volume 9, September 8, 1906, this notice kept the same title, but was changed to read as follows. The author of the Christian Science textbook does not consult nor read letters on disease. Writing to Mrs. Eddy is not personal contagion. Take no notice of startling reports about Mrs. Eddy. Our publication committee will be reliable on this subject. Beware of counterfeit letters. This enlarged notice continued to appear in subsequent issues, with the second sentence changed to read, quote, writing to Mrs. Eddy is not prohibited, end quote. There is little doubt that the leader knew what was coming. The hatred endeavoring to destroy her, quote, phenomena of human life, end quote, had given her a great deal to meet. But she had met it, and she had risen, as she said to her faithful Augusta on August 18th. Now she was preparing her followers to meet what would soon be seen by all the world. She was warning them to, quote, beware of counterfeit letters, end quote, as well as the wicked intent of such letters. She was also warning them to be prepared for whatever the enemy would endeavor to do to their leader when she wrote, quote, take no notice of startling reports about Mrs. Eddy, end quote. This notice was preparing her followers for what was soon to break like a storm in the fall of 1906. But it was not for that time alone. It was a notice to her followers for all time, else she would not have continued its publication week after week for all the ensuing years. The leader had risen above the enemy's deadly attack in the summer of 1906, and all those in her household at Pleasant View had come through the ordeal unscathed, though probably unaware of the protection their leader's work gave to them, as well as the danger they were exposed to as her soldiers. However, one of her officials in Boston did not survive the attack. Joseph B. Clark, one of the three trustees of the Christian Science Publishing Society, passed away early in September. Allison V. Stewart. Allison V. Stewart had been in the normal class of the Board of Education taught by Mr. Kimball in 1901. He had been listed in the journal as a practitioner in Chicago, together with Mrs. Stewart. Both were normal course graduates, and in addition to their practitioner's cards, advertised their, quote, Garden City Institute of Christian Science, end quote. In 1906, Allison was also publication committee for Illinois when the trustees asked him to come to Boston. He had written letters on business matters to Mrs. Eddy's secretary, Lewis Strang, prior to Mrs. Eddy's letter of September 14th, written in her own handwriting to her two remaining trustees. Beloved students, I am not so situated as to be informed of the points requisite as you are. Hence, I leave it to the trustees to decide who shall fill the vacancy. Mr. Neal, I wish to remain on the Committee on Business, and I cannot see that he can fill his position as a healer and have added to his labor aught of what belongs to another office than that he has already. Mr. McKenzie wrote at great length, both for himself and Mr. Hatton, responding to this letter. Part of McKenzie's letter to the leader said, in accordance with the message in your letter of September 14th, the remaining trustees have given their thought to the problem of filling the vacancy left by the going away of our dear brother, Joseph B. Clark, and are unanimous in proposing the name of Mr. A. V. Stewart of Chicago, at present Publication Committee for Illinois. Some time ago, he relieved himself from all business cares and has given his whole time devotedly to Christian Science work since then, so that if he should be approved by you and accept the appointment, there need be no delay in having his assistance here. The leader gave her approval on September 19th, typewritten to McKenzie and Hatton. You will please accept my thanks for your long, loving, wise letter. I am satisfied with your description and heartily recommend your election of Mr. A. V. Stewart to fill the responsible office now vacant. Our late loved and lamented Mr. Clark has gone to his reward of, quote, well done, end quote. May the God of all grace ever guide and bless you and yours. On September 25th, Allison V. Stewart officially succeeded Joseph B. Clark as trustee of the Publishing Society. 2 days later, he wrote this letter to Mrs. Eddy. Beloved leader and teacher, I wish to tell you how deeply grateful I am for the confidence made manifest in my selection to fill the vacancy on the Board of Trustees of the Christian Science Publishing Society, which was caused by the passing away of our faithful, loving, and loved brother, Joseph B. Clark. My earnest desire is to do my utmost in the work of the great cause of Christian Science wherever I am placed, and I am praying for guidance and wisdom in this most sacred trust. When the call came, I arranged to come here without delay, but I must say I came with some misgivings regarding my fitness for the place. However, the welcome accorded me by all of the splendid staff of workers here at headquarters was most hearty and kind, and I am encouraged to press forward to live and work with the understanding I have gained of your teachings, believing that my shortcomings will be dealt with in a loving manner. I wish to assure you, my dear Mrs. Eddy, if there is any way whereby I can in the least degree contribute to your comfort and pleasure, it will be a great joy for me to do so. Again, thanking you, I am sincerely and gratefully your student, Allison V. Stewart. A few days earlier, on the 18th of September, Hermann Hering had written the leader regarding his appointment to lecture in the Mother Church. He said in his letter, "I thank you deeply for the honor thus conferred, and pray that I may be a channel for truth and love on that occasion. It will be the first lecture delivered in the Mother Church Extension. If you have any suggestions to make, I will be most happy to receive and adopt them." Professor Hering also told her, as the first reader, of progress in the Concord Church and of contributions he had received for the Concord Street Fund. He included one of the latter in his letter. For the Street Fund, Solomon said of wisdom that she giveth true increase. Quote, "Her ways are ways of pleasantness, and all her paths are peace." End quote. So too of the leader's wisdom, which imparteth truth today, I send a tiny tribute to make pleasanter the way. Gertrude Ring. While scientists were interested in the Concord Street Fund, the general public was being entertained in September by rumors of a wild ride Mrs. Eddy had had behind the prize horses which had been sent to her 2 or 3 years earlier. The story was entirely false and was duly denied by Alfred Farlow, Calvin Fry, her coachman, and all others concerned. The fact was that she had never even ridden behind those horses. But the truth did not deter the calumniators. Another letter Mrs. Eddy received in September was from an early student who had not remained faithful, as had Samuel Bancroft. No doubt it rejoiced the leader's heart to send this letter to the Sentinel for publication. My beloved leader and teacher, I want to tell you what a joy I had in visiting First Church of Christ Scientist in Concord, New Hampshire, August 30th, 1906, of the great pleasure I had in attending the Wednesday evening meeting there, of the delight in seeing the lovely gifts in your room at the church, and hearing the fine organ and the chimes, all of which tell us the story of your faithful love service to God and man. My heart goes out in boundless gratitude to you for so many blessings. I find no words to number or express them. I know, dear Mrs. Eddy, you will appreciate my fullness of joy and love. Yours most sincerely, Clara E. Choate. Late in September, Mrs. Eddy received a letter from a German student, Bertha Reinke, who had come to Boston for the dedication of the Mother Church Extension in June. The writer first expressed, quote, "praise and gladness," end quote, for Christian Science and the leader, and then told of a book she had been enjoying during her summer in America. The book, The Apocryphal New Testament, published in German in 1904, was a compilation of translations by 15 or 16 German scholars from original manuscripts in Latin, Greek, Syrian, Ethiopian, and Coptic. Miss Reinke's letter included passages from this book, which she had translated into English. Her letter was the leader in the Sentinel of October 6th and stated in part, quote, "The last things, Belair, the rule of a woman, the end of the world, and the second coming of Christ." then the world ruled by the hands of a woman entirely shall rest in obedience. Then, when the royal widow shall thus rule over the whole world, all gold and silver, iron and brass, she shall cast into the salt flood, into the sea. All the elements of the world shall be forsaken. When God, dwelling in the ether, unfolds the heavens like a scroll of a book, and the whole firmament shall fall upon the earth and into the sea. End quote. Then it gives a description of the changes of the seasons, similar to what Science and Health says in regard to them. Quote, O ye rushing waves, and the entire foundation of the earth, now the sun rises, which never is to set, and all shall be in obedience again to him who returns once more into this world. End quote. I shall soon leave these shores to go back to my country and there endeavor to heal the sick and lead to the truth those who are seeking the Lord with all their hearts. They all love you, are grateful to you, and are waiting patiently the day when your great wisdom will see fit to give them your books in their own tongue. The German nation is ready for the truth as you have given it to the world. Mrs. Eddy's comment. The above letter from Miss Bertha S. Reinke is deeply interesting, but I will say that the important matter of publishing in the German language my works on Christian Science is not within my jurisdiction, except as I voluntarily assume it. I have put aside the matter of translating my writings into German since receiving the courteous approval of my thoughts upon this subject from the Countess von Moltke. The trustees of the Christian Science Publishing Society are the proper authorities to settle this question. Mary Baker G. Eddy. All the leader's actions were directed by God, even as all the hairs of her head were numbered. In the fall of 1906, her major God-directed project was a major revision of Science and Health in English. Clara McKee, who came in August to serve at Pleasant View, said of this project, she had a copy of the $3 edition taken apart in sections. This was placed right side up in the left-hand side of her desk drawer. She would take off one section at a time and go through it. Then that one was placed upside down in the right-hand side of the drawer. When she had finished going over every page of the entire book, it was in perfect order. Professor Herring's lecture in the Mother Church was scheduled for Tuesday, October 16th, and the Concord Church had asked him to deliver the same lecture in their edifice on October 28th. On the 13th of October, the Concord Lecture Committee wrote to Mrs. Eddy, Beloved leader, in making the arrangements for the lecture on Christian Science to be delivered in this city by Professor Herman S. Herring, CSB, on Sunday, October 28th, the committee have thought of inviting the mayor, Judge Charles R. Corning, to introduce the speaker, if this choice meets with your approval. Judge Corning performed this courtesy most acceptably last year on the occasion of Judge Ewing's lecture. Mrs. Eddy's reply. Beloved brethren, I am in receipt of your letter and hasten to say our mayor, Judge Charles R. Corning, is the very man for the hour and for this introduction. His history armors him with moral mail. Mary Baker Eddy. On the day of this letter regarding Mayor Corning, Lewis Strang was returning to Pleasant View from a walk in the direction of St. Paul's School when he was stopped a little west of the Pleasant View cottage by a man who asked him if all the property near there belonged to Mrs. Eddy. Mr. Strang told the man the extent of Mrs. Eddy's estate. About half an hour later, Lewis Strang was sitting in his room, which looked out upon Pleasant Street, and saw this same man, together with a second man, coming out of Professor Kent's house, directly across the street. He watched as they got into a hack and drove toward Concord. The next day, Sunday, October 14th, two men came to the door of Pleasant View, where Mrs. Sargent spoke with them. They said that Fred N. Ladd had sent them, gave not their names, but asked to see Mr. Fry. Calvin came to the door and made an appointment to speak with them at 3 o'clock. After he had shown them out, he called Mr. Strang to look at them, and Strang recognized the same men he had seen the previous day. About 1 p.m., Mr. Strang went to see Mr. Ladd, who was a reputable citizen of Concord, treasurer of the Loan and Trust Savings Bank. He was also Mrs. Eddy's cousin and her banker. Fred Ladd told Mr. Strang that the men were reporters from the New York World who had questioned him until late the night before with many foolish questions about Mrs. Eddy, refusing to credit anything he said about her being alive. Mr. Fry asked Lewis Strang to remain in the room during the interview when the men returned at 3 p.m. This is from Mr. Strang's account. Mr. Slott said that he and his companion, Mr. Lithchild, represented the New York World. He said that the World had received many letters declaring that Mrs. Eddy was dead, that Mr. Fry was the real head of the Christian Science movement, and that money was being received, in short, that a fraud was being conducted. Mr. Slott continued that these letters had interested Mr. Pulitzer, owner of the New York World, to the extent of sending them here to find out definitely whether or not Mrs. Eddy was alive. They were not after a story. He said it was not Mr. Pulitzer's purpose to use the material they had collected, provided they could satisfy themselves that Mrs. Eddy was alive. The reporters rejected Strang's and Fry's assurances that Mrs. Eddy could be seen daily upon her drive as interested testimony, saying they had been informed that the person in the carriage was not Mrs. Eddy, but a dummy. They said they would be satisfied if Professor Kent would identify Mrs. Eddy in their presence. Mr. Fry said he would bring this to Mrs. Eddy's attention and let them know the next day. Calvin did not notify Mrs. Eddy right away, but waited until the following day, Monday, October 15th, after she had returned from her daily drive. Immediately, she sent John Salcho to make arrangements with Professor Kent and August Mann to the Eagle Hotel after the reporters, who arrived about 3 p.m. Strang received them and talked with them while awaiting the arrival of Professor Kent. He also recorded their interview with Mrs. Eddy. As soon as Professor Kent arrived, the three men and myself went at once upstairs to Mrs. Eddy's office. She arose and stepped to the middle of the floor to meet them. She spoke to Professor Kent, saying that she was sorry he had lost the principalship of the Concord High School and that she hoped he would be reappointed. I introduced Mr. Slott first. She shook hands with him, and he said that he was very glad to see her. I then introduced Mr. Lithchild, whose name escaped me for a moment, and he was obliged to prompt me. Mrs. Eddy shook hands with him. She explained in a few words that her duties made it impossible for her to receive visitors and that this accounted for her seclusion. She signified that this ended the visit, though I believe that she shook hands again with Professor Kent before he left the room. I know that Mr. Slott and Lithchild preceded me out of the room and went downstairs. Mrs. Eddy remained standing during the entire visit, and as the men left, turned and walked back to her desk in the bay window. When we were going down the stairs, Mr. Lithchild said to me, with apparent conviction, quote, "She is certainly a well-preserved woman for her years," end quote. Mr. Slott also gave me to understand that he was thoroughly satisfied as to the soundness of Mrs. Eddy's physical and mental condition. They furthermore led Mr. Mann, who drove them back to the hotel, to understand that they proposed leaving town that afternoon. But those reporters did not leave Concord. They and several others had been haunting the area since September, interrogating local citizens and spreading evil reports. One upstanding Concordian, who was perturbed by this invasion, was Josiah E. Fernald, president of the National State Capital Bank. On October 2nd, Mr. Fernald had written to Cornell Wilson, "Now I have known Mrs. Eddy for a number of years and have had business relations with her since she came to Concord and made her home at Pleasant View, which relations extend up to the present time. I have also visited her in her home, so that I can state from personal knowledge that it is Mrs. Eddy and no other person whom I see riding in her carriage. I will also state that she stands high in this community. I do not find those who speak evil of her in this her home city, and I believe those who come here with evil reports come with malicious intentions. I am not a follower of the Christian Science faith, but make this statement as a citizen of Concord who wishes to see the things that are true, the things that are honest, and the things that are just prevail." Mr. Fernald was a Baptist, but at one time Mrs. Eddy said to him, "Mr. Fernald, you are a better Christian Scientist than many of my students, because you are a better Christian." An honored and trusted official of Concord, after answering a number of questions, said to his interrogator, quote, "There is little to gain by continuing this conversation. You are not after what I know. You desire that I should approve guesses. It is clear to me that your purpose is to write Mrs. Eddy down regardless of what her neighbors and those who know her best may say," end quote. What was Mrs. Eddy doing while her enemies were spreading lies? She approved the republication of the following from Volume 16 of the Christian Science Journal, March 1899. Republished by request. What our leader says. Beloved Christian Scientists, keep your minds so filled with truth and love that sin, disease, and death cannot enter them. It is plain that nothing can be added to the mind already full. There is no door through which evil can enter, and no space for evil to fill in a mind filled with goodness. Good thoughts are an impervious armor. Clad therewith, you are completely shielded from the attacks of error of every sort. And not only yourself are safe, but all whom your thoughts rest upon are thereby benefited. It is the evil thinker who injures himself with what he would have harm others. Goodness involuntarily resists evil. The evil thinker is the evil talker and doer. The right thinker abides under the shadow of the Almighty. His thoughts can only reflect peace, goodwill towards men, health, and holiness. Mary Baker Eddy. Then to Mr. McClellan she wrote, quote, "You may publish this quarterly if agreeable," end quote. 4 days after the World reporters were at Pleasant View, Mrs. Eddy wrote to the editor of the Boston Herald, "Dear Sir, another report that I am dead is widely circulated. I am in usual good health and go out in my carriage every day. Truly yours, Mary Baker G. Eddy." McClellan wrote to Mrs. Eddy on October 20th, "I like the facsimile reproduction of your letter in the Herald and should like to publish it in the same form in the Sentinel and Journal if you approve." Mrs. Eddy approved, for the facsimile reproduction of her letter appeared in the Sentinel of October 27th and in the November 1906 Journal. Another upstanding Concordian, who resented the aspersions cast upon their town's leading citizen, was the Roman Catholic editor and manager of the Concord Patriot, Mr. Michael Meehan. On October 26th, Mr. Meehan wrote a personal letter to Joseph Pulitzer, which stated, "Few, if any women living, have done as much to pass their names to posterity as has the Reverend Mary Baker G. Eddy of this city and state, and we of Concord, regardless of religious belief, have a great respect for this woman, and we resent any indignity aimed at her or passed upon her, and every decent man and woman in our city experiences a sense of shame on realizing that a great newspaper like the World, through the overzeal of its representatives, would annoy her or cause her discomfort by appealing to low natures or those given to gossip or envy to secure guesses and opinions unworthy of the World, unworthy of Mrs. Eddy, and unworthy of the intelligence, integrity, and manhood and womanhood of New Hampshire's capital city. I have met and talked with Mrs. Eddy more than once. I know her. She knows me. Have been in her home, in her private room, within a few months, and discussed with her many things. I have bowed to her carriage within 48 hours, and my salutation has been returned by her. If the intent of the World's representative to Concord be carried out in its columns the world will say in substance that Mrs. Eddy is dead and that a dummy or a substitute and not she is in the carriage each day when it passes through the main streets of our city and its occupant is greeted by our people, or it will say that Mrs. Eddy is enfeebled and decrepit and that those brilliant faculties that in the past made her wonderful accomplishments possible have departed. To every such a statement, or even insinuation, I, as one who knows, say, quote, it is not true in whole or in part, but on the contrary, is unqualifiedly false, end quote. Mr. Meehan did not understand the enemy's intent, nor wickedness, but he did see that it was shameful and totally false. If Mr. Slott had endeavored to enlist Michael Meehan and the Concord Patriot in the world's campaign against the Revelator to this age, his effort was a total failure.